The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords.
This is the Rental Income Podcast.
And now, Dan Lane.
Joining me on the podcast today from Wichita, Kansas is Leighton Kling. And I'm super excited to talk to Leighton today. He is a brand new investor, and he actually learned how to invest from listening to the Rental Income Podcast. Leighton, welcome to the show. I got to hear your story. So what got you first interested in investing in real estate?
Absolutely. First, I just want to say thank you so much for having me on. It's such a pleasure to be on.
Well, glad to have you.
I actually had my undergraduate in business management, so I've always been fairly familiar with real estate investing overall. But yes, as it pertains to the single family homes that I've been investing in, I've actually been learning a lot from your podcast, and I didn't actually buy my first home, my rental property, until I listened to the Rental Income Podcast. So you can imagine what pleasure it is for me to be on the podcast.
Yeah.
And I would love to share everything I have as far as knowledge.
So let's go back. So when you first kind of had the thought that I want to buy a rental property, how did you even know where to start? Or I guess maybe like, what was the first step that you took?
Yeah. So I listened to a lot of your guests, and what really intrigued me were the people that were investing in the single family homes. And so I thought that would be something that I would actually be able to qualify for a little easier. I actually have a home that I bought about 4.5 years ago, and I actually have a roommate, and they rent from me as well. So I thought that maybe that would be easier than getting into like a duplex or an apartment building or something of that nature. So, but by listening to your guests, I realized that really anything is possible. And so the first steps I took were to go on Zillow. I downloaded the Zillow app that everyone is probably familiar with. And I ended up finding my realtor on there. I actually found a list of realtors from Zillow. And then I ended up interviewing and screening all the different realtors they had in my region. And so
let's talk about that, because finding a good realtor that wants to work with an investor, a lot of people struggle with that. Did any of the realtors not want to work with you when you told them you were looking to buy a rental property?
They were all pretty interested in working with me. But what really did it for me was the realtor that I'm working with still today, that I bought the first home with, he was actually a home builder and in the home building industry for over 10 years. So he was really well acquainted with the structures of the home and really what to look for as far as four-figure, five-figure items that may be a warning sign when you're first looking at a home to buy.
How about with knowing what things would rent for? Because I always find that to be helpful if a realtor can kind of be a second set of eyes and say, okay, well, that this you're buying it for this price and it's probably going to rent for that price. Was he helpful at all with helping you with knowing the rental values?
That's actually a really good question, because that's actually the second reason I had actually hired him as my realtor, because his client base, about 50% of his clients are investors. And so he's really well acquainted with the different properties that are for rent in my market. But he was able to tell me, once we started going to a few showings, what each home would probably rent for. He would give me a certain range and what to expect once I bought a home. But to be honest, that those two things really did it for me. And so I was sold on using him as a realtor from there on out. And so after also listening to what numbers I should really be paying attention to from your podcast, for instance, the 1% rule, and then obviously a good cap rate, I was able to actually get confidence into buying my first home.
So tell me about that first place. Like, did you have certain neighborhoods you were looking in, or were you just looking for something that met the 1% rule? And actually, before we get into that, why don't you just explain for anyone that doesn't know, can you just explain what the 1% rule is?
Yeah, absolutely. For some of your new listeners that might not be too well acquainted, I certainly wasn't. But the 1% rule is basically saying your monthly income, your monthly rental income from a particular property, and you divide that by the asset value. So for instance, one of my properties, it rents for $650 a month, and I bought it for $50,000. So it has an approximate 1% rule of 1.25%, if that makes sense. So I divide the 650 by the property asset value of $50,000.
For anyone that doesn't understand, I know a lot of times listening to or hearing about numbers on a podcast is difficult, but an easy way that I like to explain it is to say a property you buy for $100,000 should rent for $1,000 a month. So hopefully that clears it up for anybody. So when you had a idea that you wanted to get the 1% rule, were those kind of deals everywhere in your market or your area, or did you have to narrow down to certain neighborhoods that met the 1% rule?
That's a really good question. The higher end neighborhoods are closer to the 1%. And then the areas that I'm looking at, which are kind of the middle income areas, are about 1.2 to 1.4%. So
okay,
a really good rate of return in these areas. And so I through my four homes, I'm actually able to average 1.31%.
I actually
had to do the math before coming on the podcast, but really good rates of return overall. And I don't look in the base of the market. I look in the middle income areas, and I use Zillow actually to look at the neighborhoods and approximate rental rates. So through Zillow, you can see a specific neighborhood, click on a home, and if it's been rented recently, you can see what it was listed for last.
And so your realtor took you out, showed you some houses in your target neighborhoods. Was it hard to find a place that was what you were looking for, or was it pretty easy to find your first deal?
But it was actually pretty hard. It took me about 3 or 4 months. The first property I purchased was in April of last year. So I've only been in this for not too long, a little over a year now. But my parameters for finding a home actually got to where the properties I was looking for were really specific. It had to fit in each parameter that I was looking for. So for instance, I was only looking, and I am only currently looking for homes that are built after 1945 or around that time. And one of the reasons for that is because I look at foundations, and a lot of the older homes where I live have limestone foundations and concrete block foundations, and those kind of things obviously wear out structurally with time. And so I really wanted to avoid that. And my realtor, having been a home builder for so long, actually also recommended that I go with a standard, more modern foundation. And so that's one of the things I was looking for. And then one of the other few points I wanted to make to maybe some of your new listeners was looking through one of the homes, I noticed that the roof was bad. And so my real estate agent had said that that's at least $4,000 to $6,000 for a new roof. And so I ended up making a list of six items. And throughout the six items, I have to have at least four of them to decide to purchase a home. So what these six items are is it has to have at least a newer roof, AC, heat. I do not like window units and those kinds of things, a newer water heater, newer windows, and newer siding. So as long as the home has at least four of those things, then I'm okay with purchasing the home. One of the things I'm a big stickler on is the roof, because that's obviously, as a lot of people know, a really high cost up front if a home needs a roof. Sure. And you cannot factor that into the negotiations.
Right. Now, tell me about the financing. What was that like getting approved?
So my real estate agent, after I started perusing and looking around shopping at different banks, he'd actually recommended a regional bank here, a small chain, and they actually only focus on investment loans. And so they actually don't do owner occupant homes for conventional home ownership. So to be honest, I was pretty stoked because I never heard of a bank that actually does only investment loans, but he ended up having a really good rate and I got in on a 20-year conventional loan and I had to put 20% down. Typically, I've listened to a lot of people that have been on your podcast and that seems like the normal range between 20 and 25% down is usually the norm mm-hmm. for that kind of investment loan.
And so you got the down payment. Were you able to negotiate with the sellers at all, like to maybe get them down in price or get them to pay for some of your closing costs?
Yeah. So it's kind of a competitive market here. It's a smaller market, but it's not that big either. But to be honest, I don't like offering any less than 5% off the asking price. And so what that does is a couple of things. But first, it really lets the seller of the property know that you are a serious buyer and you're not someone trying to go in and lowball them. And so they're going to take your offer more seriously. And the second thing is, because it is a more competitive environment, you want to close on a deal a little bit faster. You want to get a response back because here where I live, you get a lot of offers as soon as the property is for sale. So for instance, a property I just looked at a couple months ago, there was already 6 offers on it within the first 2 days of its listing.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay. So now you've got 4 rentals. Is there, that's a lot of rentals to buy in, you said it's 15 months?
Yes.
Right, since you've started. So like, how long did it take you after you bought the first one before you bought your second property?
It was about 5 months. And my lender is also really easygoing in that he let me use 3 lines of conventional mortgage loans. And so that's really nice. And then on this 4th property, I actually used a home equity line of credit because the first home that I purchased back in April of last year is almost paid off already. So my plan going forward, though, however, is to pay the first 2 homes completely off and use an additional home equity line of credit to get my 5th and 6th homes. So there's a lot of different ways to go about it. A lot of people here are able to use cash transactions. That's something I try to shy away from because I don't want to be too cash leveraged within a property, but I don't want to be too debt leveraged either. So I'm trying to go at a mediocre pace. And I'm really excited that I was able to get such good financing.
Yeah. Now, congratulations on. So, is the first property you said that's paid off or almost paid off?
Yeah, it'll be paid off in about 3 months.
Is that by making extra payments, like by paying more from the rental income you were getting, or were you also kicking in extra money?
Yes, actually, both. I'm using income from my personal job now, and then I'm having a lot of positive cash flow from my other properties. And so I've been using that towards that first property.
Okay.
So on the 2nd and 3rd property, I'm paying the minimum payments and then obviously paying the insurance and taxes on those. But any additional income, which is about 40%, my gross margin there is 40%, I put all towards that first property. And so once that first property is paid off, like I said, here in the next 3 months or so, I'll use all of its cash flow to pay off then the 2nd property.
That's a great snowball. So you've got now that first property paid off and then your cash flow goes up because you're not paying the mortgage. So then you have even more money to pay off other loans. So that's
absolutely
a really great way to do it. Now, are you looking to buy more properties?
Yeah. My plan is by the end of the year, get one more and then next spring, get another. And so that's something I did want to talk about here on this podcast is that having goals in mind when you first get in is extremely important. When I was first looking at my first home, I didn't know where I was going to go with this. But once you get the first one, it's really important to then have a plan and say, where is the extra cash going to go? Maybe you have investments other than real estate, but for me, I really wanted to get real estate heavy in my investments because the market I'm investing in is really stable and it's cash flowing really well, as I mentioned. So it's something that's going to be here for the long term. And so something I'm going to be looking at for quite a while here. So hopefully next year I can get 3 total properties. So my total should be up to about 8.
That's great. That's awesome. Now, what about saving money for repairs? Because it sounds like you haven't had much repair issues or nothing's really come up yet.
Yeah, the most I've had to do is actually repair a light bulb and a refrigerator. So
okay.
that's one of the things I wanted to look at. And when you're looking at the roof, the AC, the heater, those kinds of things, those are important things when you first get a home, because I don't not only want to avoid those costs when you first get a home, if you have to repair something, replace the siding or something of that nature, but it also means for the next 5 to 10 years, your overall maintenance cost associated with the home will actually be quite low.
Right, right. Yeah. So are you setting money aside? I guess like the only thing that yeah, I'd love your plan of getting the houses paid down. But the only thing that makes me a little bit nervous is I'd love to see you have some cash set aside, just because something big is going to come up at some point. You know, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're making sure that you have a buffer there just in case something happens.
Yeah, sorry, okay. I didn't answer the first part of your last question, but I do. I actually have a rule that the overall property value in total, I have to have 10% in cash reserves in case something happens.
Good.
And so
okay.
that's something that is really important for the first-time investor to acknowledge. You don't want to be too highly debt-leveraged, one, and then two, you do want cash reserves in case something does happen, because even though I'm looking at properties that are pretty much move-in ready and that have the newer items like the roof and windows and things of that nature, you never know what can go wrong and what you'll have to pay for. So
right.
It's something that I haven't been burned with, but it's something that I am prepared to deal with.
Yeah, that's good, because you just never know when out of the blue you're going to have some off the wall $10,000 expense, and being able to cover that is the difference between being successful in this business or getting into big trouble. So that's good that you're setting some money aside. So is there any other advice that you would give to someone that's brand new, looking to get started? Any advice that you would give them if they're on the edge? Because I know we have a lot of listeners that they really want to get started, but they're just afraid. Like, is there anything you could tell them to get off the fence and get going?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, if you're a disciplined person and if you have good credit and things of that nature, there's really nothing that should set you back. And really, you should just go in and speak to a bank representative and get going. I think, though, for me, I always advise investors that are starting out, at least in my region, in my area, to really look at homes that do not have basements. We've been actually getting a lot of earthquakes lately, and basements are a pretty big liability, or at least they can be. Everyone has a leaking basement story, it seems. And so throughout the life of a home, if it has a basement, you're always going to seemingly get problems with that. And so I would say, again, stay disciplined and really get well acquainted within the market that you're at. And so, again, I only deal with single family homes. I would like to get into duplexes and things of that nature, but to be honest with you, I'm kind of ignorant of that area of the market. And so I really want to wait until I educate myself further with duplexes and multifamily housing before I do it. But yes, for an investor that is just getting started, I would say, you know what, take your time, get with a realtor you really trust, and go from there. But that's one of the things is with my realtor, I actually don't have a lot of home inspections because he's able to look over things really well. And I do, however, get a termite inspection. I always recommend that to anybody who's in the investor market. I think termite inspections are extremely important and they're fairly affordable. I pay about $40 for every inspection. And so that's something to take
Absolutely.
Into consideration.
Yeah. And a lot of lenders are going to require that too. But even if they don't, spending $40 to find out if you have a termite problem is definitely worth it, because a termite problem could cost you thousands and thousands of dollars. So that is smart. Well, Leighton, congratulations. And I can't wait to have you back on the show here in a couple of years and see how you're doing. I think you're off to a great start, and I'm really proud of you. So congratulations on your portfolio. Now, you've also started a podcast too. Why don't you let everyone know about your podcast and where they can check it out?
again, listen, thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. And one of the reasons actually my brother and I started the podcast was actually because of listening to podcasts like yours, a very down-to-earth podcast that's extremely informative and can help just anybody get on to where they want to go in terms of business or anything in their careers. But yeah, we started the Retail Focus podcast initially because we're both huge podcast fans and we really felt like something was lacking in the retail podcast space. And so both of us have significant retail experience pretty much at every level within retail. And we really wanted to have something that goes beyond the retail buzzwords out there, beyond the clickbait, if you will, and beyond the sky is falling mentality of a lot of retail analysts out there. And so we're really digging deeper into retail businesses, both brick and mortar businesses and e-commerce. And each episode we cover about 5 to 6 topics, news stories, the latest earnings news from the entire retail industry here in the United States. And so we also try to have interview guests like you have. And so every Wednesday, we try to release a Retail Focus episode. And then we actually just started the Food Focus podcast, which kind of does the same thing that the Retail Focus podcast does. Instead, we talk about food restaurants and fast food chains and those kinds of things. So, but again, you're such an inspiration. And that's one of the reasons we've started these podcasts. And so again, every Wednesday and Friday is when we release the Food Focus podcast. And our Twitter handle is @RetailPodcast. And for the Food Focus podcast, it's @TheFoodFocus.
Awesome. Well, Leighton, I'm really happy that I inspired you to get started in real estate. And I'm also super excited that I inspired you to get started in podcasting. Podcasting and real estate are the two things I love the most. So I'm really excited that you're doing well on both fronts. So congratulations. And thank you for tuning in. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.